You are listening to the Race to 100 podcast, raising awareness of PTSD with Simon Buckton and Chris Young. We're up to double figures, episode 10.
As ever, introducing Chris, from 44-year-old from West Sussex, wannabe barefoot runner, wannabe half marathoner, wannabe full marathoner, wannabe Olympic. He's just a wannabe this week. That's
just
all
a wannabe.
He just wants to be.
Tell you what I want, what I really, really want. And as usual, Simon, ex-soldier from Leeds, who suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, and he is in the middle, nearly, of running 100 marathons in 100 weeks to raise awareness of the condition.
Don't forget, please visit us at race2100.co.uk. That's race, and then a T-O, and then 100, the number, .co.uk. Also, click on the Facebook and Twitter icons at the top to follow the challenge, become part of the journey. There's lots of information on there now, and a new report for the last marathon in Huddersfield. So please get over there, spread the word, and tell all your friends.
Okay, and the running order for today's show is what we've been up to, which on Simon's side is rather a lot because, as you know, we weren't able to record last week's podcast. We've got a couple of weeks' worth of information to catch up on. So Simon's last marathons, plural, his next marathon, update from Simon Stars. We're going to cover, or Simon's going to cover, another PTSD symptom this week, which is addictions. We've got an interview with a young lady called Katia, who is campaigning for a young person's mental health advocate to work with the government. We've got listeners' runs, listeners' messages and questions, the poll, and then the closeout of the show. So, what have we been up to? Well,
Actually, this week, yeah, let's...
We'll start with you, shall we, this week?
No, let's start with you this week.
Okay.
Apart from, obviously, missing me last week because I was sort of in my bed for a week with food poisoning, unless I got my weeks mixed up.
You got your weeks mixed up.
Was that the week before? Anyway, what have you been up to?
What have I been up to? I've been a good boy.
Really?
You told me not to keep increasing my long runs, so
that surprises me.
I know. Wonders
Chris,
I've never seen.
The stubborn mule, young.
Well, as I say, my goal is to obviously try and complete a marathon, and you're quite right. I don't want to, even though I'm feeling confident, everything's feeling good at the moment, I don't want to put the mockers on it. So I've been back to my running club, which I haven't really been to since I got the injury early in the summer. For various reasons, I haven't managed to get back there. But I've now got back there, and there's a few people that go out on an 8 to 8.5 mile run. So I think, okay, well, that kind of fits in with about as long as I should be going. So I'm using that as my long run, and then just fitting in a few other runs around that in the week. Out on my bike as well, just to keep the bike legs moving and try and get some muscle memory into those for my my hopeful Olympic triathlon as well next year. And that's about it, really. I've had fairly quiet in terms of training. Our phone line got cut off by someone doing some road works, so that was really useful. So I lost my internet for quite a while. And we had a power cut as well. What about you? Quite a lot.
I have now had my smoke detector fixed. Ends the deathly silence. I can hear. I can hear complaints. Coming in by the thousands that there is now no more smoke detected in the background, and my enhanced sound now, it's all a bit bizarre. I'm not sure if I can take it. Actually, just to say something quickly about me talking about you going running too far, Andy Stoneman, who does our graphics, he came with me to the Huddersfield Barton Marathon, said he was going to run a 5K and ended up running a marathon in just over 4 hours. And literally jogged it. So, yeah. So he didn't listen either, fully enough, but it's quite amazing and shows you what you can do. Anyway, on to me. So I had the last marathon. Oh no, where was I? Where was I? What was I doing? Yeah, back on the old horse thing. I said, so I'd had a week where I had food poisoning, and then it was down to the Luton Marathon, and look, yeah, that's gone now. So Luton Marathon done, first one back after missing one, and that was fine. Forgot my racing chip, which is the second time I've done that. So I crossed the line as a ghost. And didn't get a time. Well, I think I had about 4:12 on the old watch. But yeah, so that's twice I've done that this year where I've forgotten to put my timing chip on. And I spoke for the first time. Went to Bradford College and spoke to some of the sports students there, who apparently they start moving around and fidgeting and going on Facebook after about 2 minutes, but they all engaged, and it was quite something, and yeah, it was great. I did 45 minutes where I actually spoke and then took questions. I think
you managed to limit it to 45 minutes.
Yeah, with no script.
Wow. Straight off. Someone have a cattle prod behind you or something.
Actually, I've just had an email from the tutor where I spoke at Bradford College, a lady called Sue, and she just said, I just wanted to say thanks again for coming to speak with my students at Bradford College. It certainly put into perspective the power of exercise and certainly raised their awareness of PTSD. We all wish you luck for your 100 marathons. I've done 2, 8 years apart, and know it took a long time for me to recover from. You're certainly an inspiration. I understand you're also coming to speak to the pre-uniform service students, several more than my single class group. All the best for that and for your future in inspirational speaking and running challenges. So yeah,
fantastic.
That was yeah, it went down really well, and had absolutely loads of questions, and it was great. And like I said, I've got another one. Well, I've got a few coming up now. They're actually coming in now, so it was good to get out of there and get started and in front of there. And then I went to AQL, one of my sponsors, and in Leeds, the Civic Trust give these blue ovals for, you know, the older buildings and things like that. And the building at AQL is called the Salem Church. I think it's one of the oldest churches left in Leeds now. And it was also the place where Leeds United were founded. Bit of a random fact.
Oh, right.
So they had the Blue Veil unveiling. So I hot-footed it literally from Bradford over to Leeds. And then Adam Beaumont, who's the MD, gave me a chance to speak. I had a chat, had a schmooze with the Lord Mayor, who came over and spoke to me for about 10 minutes afterwards. And it was really good. So there starts my speaking, my inspirational speaking career.
And your acting career as well has been progressing, I hear.
My acting career.
Been on TV, haven't you?
Yeah, actually, and you do. Four hours. 3 hours yesterday.
Wow.
It's quite funny because I was saying to them afterwards, so they sent actually the one of the news readers, and then another guy came and went down to Roundy Park, which is where obviously I do a lot of my running, and we have park run down there. And they literally do about 20 different shots running around the lake, your feet, this shot, that shot. Can you just run around there? Can you just go backwards? Why can't you run backwards? Can you go over there? No, can you just go left a bit? Can you hug the wall? Can you?
A half marathon just doing the filming.
Well, I'd already been down with Andy because we're planning this new route down there, which I'm going with Parkrun today. We'd already been around there for about an hour, and then she's like, "We want you to do another lap," and then we want you to, and there's all these people wandering past as they do, going, "What's going on here? Who's this random guy?" Then it started raining. Just as we finished the lap, it started raining, and then we came home here, and then we filmed at home here, and you know, the whole thing is probably going to be about 5 minutes or something like that, maybe 10 minutes on TV, and it actually took 3 hours.
Wow.
To do the bits and pieces. It's either like when, look at your medal, can you just turn it over now? No, can you look that way? Can you look down? Can you look up? Can you look over there? Can you walk in? Can you walk back out again? Interesting experience, but yeah, that will go. Unfortunately, thanks to pension strikers today, I was meant to be on there live last night, but they bumped it because obviously, unfortunately, I had the death of Gary Speed, who committed suicide. And so obviously that's been the big news up here because he played for Leeds United for a long time. So it was bumped for that. So I'm now not live. So it's obviously pre-recorded. And then because the strike's today, it probably won't go on today. So I think it's going to go on tomorrow. And it's one of the biggest TV regions going. So we're told it's between 3 and 4 million people.
Really?
See it.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's going to be a...
So hopefully if we can find a clip online after it's gone out, we can put a link to that on...
Yeah, it'll be on Catch Up. Yeah, on Catch Up calendar.
So I'll put it on the show notes if we can find it. And also it'll be on Facebook as well and Twitter.
Also, I was in the Sunday Mirror on the Sunday just gone, bizarrely. And again, we had two full pages. And then Michael Barrymore decided to get caught with cocaine or something.
Yeah.
And also, I think it's David Rathbone, the police officer that was shot by Ryle Mote last year. He started to have a relationship with a lady from 7-7. So we lost that. We got a bigger piece on the internet, which I think that's gone around. And we did get a piece in the paper. So, I don't think I've been out of the media now for nearly 5 months. So it's going really well and it's getting bigger.
Simon's last marathon.
So my last marathon was at the Huddersfield Park Run. It was Saturday this week because Parkrun starts on a Saturday. And I know Chris and Kerry, who are the directors over there, Chris is actually the park manager as well, which is really cool. And so we drove over there and it's quite taken me aback by the fact of how big they got, you know, how big they supported me, how much they got behind me. To say it wasn't, you know, like, I mean, it doesn't matter if it's official marathon or not, we did the distance.
Exactly.
I do prefer these where actually it's the community. In fact, somebody came up to me and said it's fantastic that the community, people in the community are allowed to be involved in this, which I found quite touching. It's hard to describe because it has touched me. I mean, I normally say that London Marathon was my most emotional marathon because, you know, it was Susanna, my girlfriend's first marathon. I ran all the way around with her and that was emotional. But this one has touched me the most. This was my most emotional just because I knew some of the people there. It rained and people, there was one guy who stood outside for 4.5 hours.
Really?
In the rain. He gave Susie some money at the beginning and then he came back in and gave her some more money at the end. And I was, you know, quite very, very, very taken aback. And I think there's a piece in the Huddersfield Examiner today. It was a lady called Nikki Dawson who actually, as you know, she just started Run Direct. I think it might have been her first time or second time. And just to say that what they put, I mean, they put signs around the park that said, you know, by Buckden Hill, keep running, keep smiling, Simon's downhill stretch, you know, these little signs all the way around the park, which, you know what I mean, kind of thing. Plus, everybody sponsored a lap to try and get me some money.
Great.
I worked to Give to Help for Heroes. They wouldn't allow me to do that. They wanted to go to me. But they read out the name on each lap of who sponsored it. And the actual person ran with me for most of the laps. So that person that sponsored the lap had gone and then come back and then ran on that lap with me.
Oh, what a great idea.
So, like I said, it's hard to describe just how far they got behind me. And it was fine to begin with. It was a little bit overcast and that, but it then rained, I think, for about 2.5 hours and nobody was bothered. Everybody was smiling, everybody was laughing. Chris, who, like I said, who's the park manager, he ran his furthest ever distance of half marathon. I think his previous best was 10K. Right. Andy Stoneman, who came over from Leeds with me, who said he would do a 5K, he actually did the park run in 20 and a half minutes and then continued on and did a marathon, I think, in about 4:05.
That's amazing.
His first ever off the back of nothing. I think his longest ever run was something like 10, 11 miles, 12 miles.
Really?
I had another guy called Ives Solo, who's another regular at my park run. Who'd been in bed for nearly 3 weeks with the virus that's going around, I think, Leeds at the moment. Not only did he get out of bed, he hadn't ran at all in that time. He ran 11 miles, which was his furthest ever. Yeah, it was day of... And it's things like that that really... Do you know what I mean? They really sort of bring it home to you.
And, yeah, absolutely. And it must make it... I mean, I don't know from not having done a marathon, but obviously they're tough to do. And having that kind of support and knowing you've got somebody different on each lap as well must make it a lot quicker for you.
Well, it just removes some of the thought, you know, like, oh, I'm struggling kind of thing, because you've got people chatting to people all the way around, as I do, different people. People who are like really interested and really bothered, and you know, I actually don't even have that support at my own parkrun in round day, so
really?
It made it rather special. And then at the end, I went in, the coffee owner had given free coffee. They'd got a trophy engraved for me and a medal engraved for me, which again, I don't even get when I enter an official marathon half the time.
Nah,
well. Presented that to me. They also made a cake in the colour of my logo, with an exact replica of my logo. And, you know, and then counted up the money. They raised £305 in that you know, time alone. Wow. And then presented it to me. And like I said, just, I was a bit dumbstruck in there, to be honest. Just the warmth of people, the fact they got behind it. One of the fastest runners in Yorkshire today, a guy called Matthew Pearson, I mean, I think he does 15 minutes for 5K. He come back around and ran some knots. And when I walked the hills, as I do towards the end now, you know, he just stuck with me, walked up the hills, we chatted.
Great.
I don't know, just everybody who took part saw it was for me. It was about me, but they got, you know, some of them got personal, you know, personal triumphs, but it was about me and just to be made to feel so homely. And it's, I'm still a bit lost, you know, I'm still a little bit lost for words about it. So yeah, that was my last marathon.
Sounds like it would that would be a great way to do your last, you know, your 100th marathon. If you know, it would be so emotional, and you could get so many people there with you.
Well, the idea that they've now come up with, and bizarrely they've started to organise it already, Huddersfield Park Run have a volunteers Facebook page, which is closed. And then I think I went in there, as I do. It's one of them things, they start a post and it suddenly has 50 posts in about 20 minutes.
Right.
And it was just like, let's get Simon's 100th marathon organised, which Kerry started it.
Right.
And it's just unbelievable. And there's people who've never run a marathon. And I think already what they're looking at, what they want to do is the 100-100. So I think basically what it is 100 people will be invited to run the marathon, and they have to fundraise an amount of money. It might be £100.
Right.
To get a bulk figure that will probably be split between the challenge and Help for Heroes. But, you know... It might be more. It might be 1,000, because, you know, it would be a huge amount of money, which would be fantastic. So a little marathon, 100 people, and I think already there's about 14 of them signed up.
Fantastic.
In a day kind of thing, and I think I may do my 50th, which is my halfway point. I may do that there as well, just because they're so enthusiastic and they want to do it, which just makes it. Like
absolutely,
I said,
makes it. And also, like you say, other people can be part of something a lot bigger than, you know, just. Although it's a massive thing to run your first marathon, as I know, you know, aiming for mine, to run either your first marathon or maybe your second or third, with you as being part of that challenge is a lot more special than just running a standard marathon, I would say.
Yeah, like I said, because it's been put on by, you know, some of these people are not even runners, but they're still there and taking photos and this, and it just makes it more special. It makes it more personal. Whereas, you know, when you go to the marathons, it's just not personal.
No,
at all.
Exactly.
It's great because you meet other people and you get to go somewhere, but you know, this is West Yorkshire. It's almost home for me. And like I said, just the effort that Nikki put in, Kerry, Chris, everybody. There's too many names actually to mention over there. So again, a huge thanks to everybody over there. It was pretty emotional for me. I think I did have a few tears at the end. I think even Chris did. I think a few people did. Means a lot. Just, you know, it means a lot. The people that know me would know that it's not the big marathon. It's not going to Amsterdam or the big marathons that's gonna bother me. That, you know, they are just a marathon at the end of the day. I've travelled a lot, so that doesn't really mean anything. But to go to places on your doorstep where people are just so bothered about, you know, what you're doing and the feedback and comments, it's inspirational itself. And I'm glad that people got their own personal, you know, personal targets out of it and ran further than they've ever done, which is a huge and amazing byproduct.
Simon's next marathon.
So on to my next marathon, which I actually don't know where it is. I think we were aiming this week because there wasn't an official marathon that we could find, because funds are pretty low at the moment. So I think it was going to be in Roundtay, and that's where it may be. And it may just be me going around. So I'm not actually sure. We're actually working on the marathon list at the moment, trying to get it up to date, because like I said, it has been very busy and other things sort of tend to take priority. So I'm sure that next week I'll be talking about whatever I did or whatever I did not do. I know I'm a couple of marathons down now, but again, there's no world record here. There's no official thing in this. So we will find a marathon somewhere, and I'll be out and off. So I'll let you know soon.
So well, if we once you know that, we'll get that onto probably Facebook and Twitter, won't we? So people, if people are close to there, they can come and give you some support.
Absolutely. Now on Simon Stars. If you haven't actually been following, I'll just quickly explain what this is. I wanted to try and mentor a couple of people with my knowledge of the marathons that I've gained, just so that I could help other people who had their own little, you know, personal stories and hadn't run a marathon. So it's basically a couple of people who are attempting to run their first marathon next year, and I will be mentoring them, trying to guide them. Chris, as you probably now know, is one of them, and he usually talks about what he's been doing at the very beginning, but then there's a couple of other people, and each week we'll have clips, and there's also going to be write-ups and blogs and information on the actual website. You can follow their progress on racetowhundred.co.uk, and it's under the Get Involved and Simon Stars. There's a blog on each person, and then you can read about their progress, and I have seen, I think, Laura ran the first official 10K, so fantastic news for her. I think Helen's up to her longest ever run of, I think, might correct me, Chris, but I think it's, what, about 8 miles, eight and a bit miles or something now, I think she's up to.
Yep, so, sounds about
yeah,
right.
There's, yeah, so it seems to be progressing well for everybody. And so each week there's normally a little bit of an audio clip, and I believe we've got a clip from Helen and Laura.
Hi, this is Helen from Simon Stars with my weekly update. Bit of a short update this week. I actually joined the running club officially last week, went out with them, did just under 4 miles. Bit of a slower pace, but when I finished, I could quite easily have gone on for a bit further and really enjoyed it. And I think that's what running's all about. And on Saturday, we started upping the mileage, ready for my first half marathon in January. A friend and I went out on a very misty morning, went and ran round the village, through the woods, back down a country lane, just under 7.5 miles, which I was really excited about because that's the furthest I've run without stopping. But it was such a lovely, enjoyable run. You know, there was wildlife to be seen. We saw the first robin of the year. So all in all, it's been a really positive week on the running front. Just quite a quiet week. Done a lot of walking in between as well, and I'll be back at running club tomorrow night, so I'll keep you posted. More from me next week.
Hi, it's Laura from Simon Stars. Just a quick update on how things have been for me during the last week as regards to my training. A bit of a quieter week last week, really, because I had a 10k race on Sunday, so I didn't want to overdo it too much, so a couple of runs out on Tuesday and Thursday with running group, which were both great. And then, yeah, I went to do the Kingsbury Water Park 10K on Sunday morning. I woke up at 5 o'clock that morning to hear the rain going absolutely crazy outside, and as it was an off-road race, I knew then that it was going to be pretty muddy and pretty difficult. I've never run an off-road race before, so I was quite apprehensive on how I was going to get on. When we got there, really windy on Sunday, which made it quite chilly, but as soon as we set off, it soon warmed up and the sun came out, so that was quite nice. It was two 5k laps, which I find psychologically quite difficult to run. I think many people do, really. So yeah, we set off quite a reasonable pace, quite a good pace. The paths were quite narrow, so it was a little bit like bumpy with other people trying to kind of find your own space and get into a good rhythm. So I think it was between miles 2 and 3, it was incredibly muddy. very up and down, so really difficult to be able to kind of get up the banks and then get down the hills the other side without going straight on your bum. So and especially as I don't like getting dirty, I'm a bit of a girl, so I was whining to myself about that. But all in all, it was a really good race. I really enjoyed it. I didn't run with my running partner. I told her to go because I was holding her up a little bit, and I know that she was keen to beat her PB, so off she went. And I then kind of buddied up with a lady from Birmingham, so we started to run together, and that was quite good because we actually ran at a good pace together, and I quickened her up a little bit, which was nice, even though I was still running at quite a slow pace. So I didn't beat my time that I set a couple of weeks ago, but I was 2 minutes over that. But I think for an off-road race and a muddy off-road race at that, I was quite pleased to only be 2 minutes over, because I thought I'd run much slower than what I had. So yeah, it was really nice. Managed a nice sprint finish on the last couple of 100 meters, which was quite nice, and chased down a couple of people before we went over the line. So yeah, all in all, it was a really good week. Really pleased with myself. This week, back in the gym, back running again. So we'll see how things go by the end of the week.
And now it's time for listeners' runs.
This week at the beginning, we've got some very unfortunate news, which was sent to me in an email from Alice Birtle. Apparently, trainee teacher Philip Gualo, who's a 25-year-old club runner who ran for the City of Norwich Athletics Club, who unfortunately collapsed and later passed away after running the Norwich half last weekend. He was a regular runner and even ran 12 marathons in 12 months in 2008 for a charity. I know it hits home hard, but this guy was a really decent guy and he deserves our respect. Obviously, it's really unfortunate to hear of, you know, any death anywhere, especially in a week where, in those of you that know, will probably have heard about Gary Speed, a footballer who used to play in the Premier League, who recently took his own life. So yeah, it hits home quite hard, and it's always, you know, not very nice to hear about runners who are running. And obviously, Philip has done, you know, quite a lot for charity, and running 12 marathons in 12 months is amazing. And so we'd just like to send our condolences to his family, and just thank Alice for sending it in and bringing it to our attention.
Right, and we've got a couple of weeks to cover off on the listeners' runs. So first one is from Hamster1207 on Twitter. Apologies, tweeps, I'm grumpy. 3:58 in today's Luton Marathon. Once I knew I'd missed the 3:47 PB, I kind of gave up and unzipped the man suit.
we don't half get some funny ones. The thing is, 3:58 is, you know, it's a sub-4 running, and this is what happens at the marathon. It's not that bad. Obviously, they've had a drop-off somewhere towards the end, and that's what happens. But, I mean, you know, well done. Nor Green. Wow, that was close, but just squeezed in 3 hours at Luton Marathon, 2:59.17. Yeehaw! In yeehaw, my best travel. Yeehaw! That's fantastic. You know, any sub 3 marathon is brilliant, so you should be very impressed with yourself.
Next one from Jim Johnson 74. Me and the boys just got waved at by Superman at the Luton Marathon. Hash, nice touch.
Was it the real Superman?
Or was it you?
Do we need to tell the boys that, you know, actually these are fictional and don't exist? You do see some rather funny people at these places now.
I wonder if he has kryptonite gel.
I've just seen another one from Paul Salid tweets at 100 Marathons Weeks, just a 10K. But I PB'd by a long way. My last official 10K was 55.04, And this week was 50:37. Woo!
Wow. That's a big increase. Yeah. Big improvement.
That's huge. So well done for that. And you'll be going for the old sub 50, which is into great territory.
Right, one from Pat K. Gilmore on Twitter again. New half marathon PB today, 1:34 at Gosport. A great race, well organised and perfect conditions.
Yeah, 1:34. Well done. We've got one from one of our favourite followers, Viv. And she said, I got a PB at the Leeds Abbey Dash on Sunday, 52:33, which is over a minute quicker than I did at the York 10K at the end of July. I've been doing interval sessions and I've lost a bit of weight. Plus, Simon has said that I should think positive and believe in myself. Absolutely, Viv, and you've smashed it, and I can see your training every day, and you're doing really well. So, well done for that, Viv.
There's one from Matt West 27. Just waiting to pick up our Indian takeaway after a great day, half marathon PB, and Liverpool beating Chelsea. That could be a contentious one.
dear me, yeah. Let's stop going to the old football politics. Thank you very much. Let's move along it. We've got Andy J 77. Happy with half marathon matching my snooker PB. 1:47. Hash tidy. It's quite clever, that, isn't it? Yeah. A snooker PB. Fantastic.
Excellent. Right. And now we're on to listeners' questions. And we'll start with one on Twitter again from Red Azril. What plans does Simon have after his 100th marathon?
I think we get asked this every week now, don't we?
He's asked a question for me. So what are you going to be doing, Simon?
Yeah, and you still keep asking. I'm not sure if my new manager, Simon, would be allowing me to discuss this. What I can say is that, what's happened recently is that a guy called Simon Blackwell that I met when I was speaking at a veterans event in Newark, it's about a month ago now, seemed like a lot longer. Basically, Simon has now become my manager / publicist, and he's taken on a lot of my bits and pieces and works out what I'm doing. But also in 2013, once I finish this challenge, we're already working on our next challenge, which will be in the UK for a year, we believe. And after that, we're then going to America for nearly a year. And it will be a set of challenges, but not all running. So there will be a set of challenges, and that's about all I can say, because we're currently in talks with a production company for it to go on one of the major terrestrial TV channels. So
wow, maybe, sounds exciting.
Yes, it would dwarf this. That's about all I can say, is that it would be much bigger than this, and a lot of different challenges, because what I can see now is that I'll basically carry on doing the challenges for the rest of time now, when my body gives up or something like that. So what I can say is that over the next couple of months, as some things come together, I don't want to be one of these that says, oh, we're going to do this, I'm going to do that, and then for whatever reason it doesn't happen kind of thing, because we're putting sponsors together in bits and pieces. So and me and Simon want to focus on here and now and what we're doing now. So I'm sure you'll hear little bits and pieces coming out here and there.
Yeah, little tantalising tidbits that we can try and piece together and guess what you're going to be doing.
Yes.
Right, so some questions on Facebook as well. One from one of my favourite names of people, Merrick Daft Punk Parkola. He did actually contact me and say it's because he likes the group Daft Punk, but I still think it's a great name.
I think he's down your neck of the woods as well, isn't he?
Is he? I think you might be right, but you know what my memory's like. Oh, right.
He's in Brighton, which and I believe is in northwest East Sussex or somewhere.
He asks, what's your opinion on the death of Gary Speed? Is this a clear opportunity to make mental illness a key issue in the public eye? And if so, any ideas on how to make it happen? Don't worry about specifics on how to make it happen. A general idea would be great, as I've been thinking about it and I've come up with nothing.
Yeah, I've had a couple of chats offline with Marek, and he's a top guy, and I hope you won't mind me saying he's had a couple of struggles, and we've had a couple of chats, and fair play. But yeah, to talk about Gary Speed, I'm from Leeds, and Gary Speed a Welsh guy, but he came up through the youth system in Leeds. So, you know, even though he wasn't born in Leeds, he was one of the very few now that, you know, that, or in them days, this is early 90s, that go all the way through the youth system and then go on to play. You know, so they've gone through everything kind of thing. And it was a bit of a cult figure. He's one of them guys that, you know, you wouldn't say best in the world. You'd just say workhorse, and you'd just say, you know, consummate professional, I think is the word. You never heard anything about him in the paper. You know, you never heard a bad word said about him by anybody kind of thing. Just one of them, like, almost Mr. Nice. Sounds cheesy, but Mr. Nice guy. And, you know, so it's hit hard. You know, he played in Leeds for Leeds United. He also played Sheffield United, so two West Yorkshire clubs. And I believe he's played the most times in the Premier League, over nearly 600 games. And so it's one of them things that, like, for me, because I'm around suicide, and a number of my friends in the military committed suicide. My aunt also committed suicide in 2006, and I don't know how hard that struck the family. It's almost for me like it's terrible, but, you know, people sometimes believe that because he's famous, you're connected to it. And, you know, I'm not, because I didn't, you know, personally know Gary. But just to read about a 42-year-old person doing well, he'd recently taken charge of the Welsh football national side, doing really well. And also, what's, you know, what the other thing is, and it is relevant, that he was on, I think he was on Match of the Day 2, sitting next to Gary McAllister, who's another ex-Leeds player. And he was smiling and talking. And you know, I understand this. Some people may not. And people have said, oh, but he looks fine there. And this is probably the point what Marek's on about. Someone can be there looking fine, looking well on national TV. And then literally, I think 12 hours later, he was dead. And I think it is that thing about, God, you know, what's he going through? And we can sit here and nobody's going to know. And this is the thing, I think, with when a person takes their own life. No one's ever going to fully know. And you hear all these stories about why he did this and that and the other kind of thing. But we should remember that he's left a wife and two children and the family and friends, you know, who were deeply shocked. And I suppose it does, like, for me, it just makes you stop a minute. But I'm used to, you know, I'm used to this now. And so for me, it's sort of a bit, it doesn't hit as hard, but I can understand that it would hit other people, you know, quite hard. You don't want to use someone's, you know, death to make a statement, but I suppose at the moment it's in the national media, so people who have got these problems and who are suicidal, I suppose it highlights the fact that one person can be sitting there and 12 hours can be, you know, can be dead, and you know what happened. And you know, I get to think that, was nobody there? Did nobody recognize? I mean, with me, people see when I'm at that point. They know when I'm at that point. They know what happens. They know I shut down, kind of thing. So they would, you know, they would know, and hopefully they wouldn't allow me to get to that point. So, you know,
this is what needs to change, isn't it? And you know, this is part of what you're doing, is that these things are not visible and not that obvious to people who don't know you, and they happen at lots of different levels, from, you know, from depression right up to suicidal tendencies, etc. And on the face of it, it's not always obvious that somebody has got these things going on, and it's a difficult one, you know, from somebody who doesn't suffer, luckily, from any mental health conditions. For me to try and look at somebody, if I met you in the street and you were having a bad day and you were just a bit grumpy, I just think you're a grumpy person. I don't want to talk to you.
But you know about that anyway.
Yeah, but you see what I'm saying, because they're,
yeah,
you know,
it's hard. Yeah, this is the whole point, Chris. You know, there are, you will know a little bit more now, because I'll tell you, I'll go, I've not slept well, or this, another kind of thing. So you'll now have more of an understanding. So if you now saw somebody, you might think a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's the, well, there's nothing good comes out of someone taking their own life. There's just nothing good about it at all. However, it just might mean that people, maybe such as yourself and others, that have not been around that before and haven't suffered from these type of conditions. Again, when you see someone slumped over their pint or struggling in the street or something like that, you might just stop and think, is there another reason for that? Or if you see someone smiling and laughing, you might think, actually, it doesn't mean all is well. With me, that's exactly the same. If I'd have been on there Like when we're filming for calendar yesterday, I would look like the most together person in the world and that nothing is going on. And I actually said this, I think, probably when I was speaking to a reporter. And that's how it is. And again, yeah, I'm trying to create awareness around it so that people will talk about it and will look for the symptoms. So I suppose awareness, more awareness for a little bit. I mean, it's quite fickle, as we know, as I know with the media now. It'll be around for a couple of weeks and then it will be forgotten. But I suppose it's good for some people out there that are struggling who can relate to this. And I'm really hoping that something good, you know, like I said, it is terrible. And I feel for his family and friends who are going to have no answers forever. And I think somebody, you see these things about around suicide and people judging, saying, you know, he was a coward. I totally disagree with that. To sit there and get to the point where you say, now I'm going to die, I think is actually an act of you know, I think it's unbelievable where he must have got to.
Yeah.
I actually think it's incredibly brave. I disagree with people. What's tough, obviously, is the fact that it leaves behind. So people are never going to have the opportunity to ask, you know, like, I'm sure friends are probably saying, why don't you come and speak to me? And this other kind. So that's tough, but I think it's an incredibly, you know, brave act, and he didn't want to be here. And I have been to that point. I can tell you now, I've been to that point where I've questioned why I'm on this earth, but I obviously have an inbuilt strength within me, and I'm on my journey, and you know, there's no point me doing anything like that, because then the awareness stops, and that's not, you know, not what I'm here for. So I'm hopeful that something positive, it may seem strange, but something positive and some more awareness comes out of it. And people like me, we're just trying to do, you know, our little bit. So thanks for that, Merrick, because it is, you know, very relevant and very new.
Okay. One from Kelly Wilson-Blackwell. Roughly what speed does Cy run at? I did my longest run to date last week, 5.2 miles at an average of 9:30 minute miling. I could have gone further, but not 21 miles more.
Yeah, and to say, Callie is the wife of Simon Blackwell. I think the surname gives it away. And Simon being NYMA manager. And Callie's had a huge journey as well, because I've seen pictures of when, I think she's lost 5-6 stone or something like that, and now she's going to be in the TA as a PT, like physical training instructor, which is just huge.
What a turnaround.
I think called Infinity, which is something from America, which is... And she's very lean and toned, like almost like a bodybuilder now. So, another amazing lady. What speed do I run at? Well, I'll do a comparison. So, at my peak in the mid 90s, when I was running really well, I was probably racing at about 5:25 to 5:30 minute miling.
Wow! Over what distance is that?
Well, 5K, 10K, and then obviously when I got to 10 miles and above, I would be a little bit slower. So my PB at 10 was 57, so 5.7 minute mile. And then I think my half marathon was 65 minutes. No, not 65 minutes. That'll make me very fast. 75 minutes. 75 minutes, 65 minutes. 75 minutes. Blimey, I'm having one of them days today. 75 minutes, 1:15. Yes, I used to be around there, and then you know, so yeah, between 5.5, 6 minute mile at my peak. And then when I started running again in 2010, I think I'd got back down to 5K. I got back down to about 6:21, 6:22 minute miling, and I'd done a flat 5:55 mile on the track. So that was when I started to run again, and actually progressed quite quickly. Within the marathons now, I'm to the point where I'm trying to run a 10-minute mile for the whole thing. And I think the other day at Huddersfield, I wasn't that far off. I think I might have been about 10:26 or something like that. Went out a little bit quicker because I was pacing. But that's what I'm aiming for now. So I don't really do any runs now, probably faster than 9-minute mile, because there's just no point. I don't have the speed. I don't do any speed work now. And I don't have that, you know, that speed. And I tend to... Focusing on the you know, that just means that you can pace, because you do need to pace a marathon. You can get 10:10, 10:10 for 26 miles, then you've done brilliantly. And as I said to you, Chris, that pacing, especially in a marathon, is paramount.
Yeah.
Because if you think going 30 seconds per mile quicker for 10, 11 miles, that's huge. That's a long time that basically you will lose at the end. You will definitely lose it at the end. So you either put it in the bank at the beginning and save it for the end when you really need it and you're struggling, or you do that and then you're going to be struggling, you know, towards the end. So I don't, although I do look at that as a minute mile to get the pace, I'm not looking at it for speed anymore, which a lot of people, you know, would be doing. So I know that Callie is now starting to run a little bit further distances to help her. Obviously, that she, you know, she's, if she's going to become a physical trainer, so she needs to be running some longer runs. So, yeah, it is hard going on for that number of miles. But I've now changed. My body's now accustomed to endurance running. And so I can probably run for you know, possibly 24 hours at between maybe 10 and 12 minute miling and just continue. That's the way my body's conditioned now. But I cannot run really any quicker anymore. I'd be interested to see if I did a flat out 5K, what I would do.
No, don't get any faster, please.
I think around the course last week that we're looking at Roundy Park, I think I did do a 23:40 something. So and I think I did the new course yesterday, which is flat and it has a bit of trail within there. I think I did 2.5K in I would have probably been on for about 21.5.
Right.
Something like that. So, and that was, you know, that was 2 days after running at Huddersfield. So, I hope that answers your question, Kelly.
One from Richard Douglas. How do you deal with the constant miles in training? Is there any music you like listening to, or do you prefer to be out there just with your thoughts and nature? You don't run naked, do you?
No, I just eat naked bars. Boom, boom.
Very good.
Constant miles. Well, to be honest, the only constant miles I really do are actually at the marathon. I'm not really an advocate of, I've been asked this quite a few times, I'm not really an advocate of running a marathon with music on. I mean, I find it quite impersonal. And the thing is with me, I'm there, you know, again, I'm not running the marathon for a world record. I'm not running to get a t-shirt. I'm running to promote awareness of post-traumatic stress disorder. That means if I was running with headset on, people wouldn't approach me, they wouldn't talk to me, and I couldn't talk to other people. So when I run the marathons, I don't run with any music. I don't need it because I talk to people and I'm promoting what I'm doing, and that's what I'm there for. And I do like to be able to talk to people, and I do like people to be able to say, oh, I've seen you in a magazine, what are you doing, and this and other kind of thing, or see people that I now know on the marathon circuit. There's a couple of times if I have gone out on runs, very rarely, probably this year, maybe twice, I think I may have run with music. I personally don't need music to keep me going, anything like that. I have thoughts about why I'm doing it and many thoughts and many conversations going on, so I don't really need it. And when it comes to training, I am back out there running now. So the last couple of weeks I have been out there running. So I think this week I've already done maybe 12 miles. I'm out again probably today to go around this the new course we're looking at for Roundy Park Run. And again, but they're short distances now. They're like 2, 3, 4 miles. I'm not going to run with music on for 2, 3, 4 miles because by the time I've got started, I'm finished. I can understand for other people, it may motivate them, maybe worthwhile. Maybe if my dulcet tones are ringing in your ears telling you to keep going, that would probably be more worthwhile than a bit of music. But like I said, there's no right or wrong with this, but I don't want to go to a marathon and run with, you know, the old music game.
Okay, now Simon's going to cover another PTSD symptom, and this week he's talking about addictions.
Yeah, obviously each week I'm trying to look at the different symptoms so that people out there that don't understand what post-traumatic stress disorder is, first you can understand the main, you know, the components to it, because there is a lot. PTSD is a whole range of symptoms, basically. And also the fact that you may then see other people, and then you, if you know what the symptoms are, you may then speak to them or question it or ask them to go see a doctor. So addictions, which is mainly alcohol and drugs. Personally, I've never touched drugs, but I have not such an addiction for me. I'll explain why I touch alcohol, but. At my worst point, I was probably drinking possibly around a litre of vodka a day. And it's quite bizarre because until a doctor actually told me what I was doing, I was like, well, I just have a bottle of vodka a day, which sounds a bit bizarre now. And my alcohol now has probably gone down 98%. You will rarely see me drinking now. I might have one night out here and there kind of thing, because obviously I've got the marathon, so it's not very good. And also, alcohol is a depressant, as are drugs in the day. So wherever you go up with it, you're going to come crashing down. Add that to the other symptoms of PTSD, and it's not a very nice world. So to explain, why do people, or the people that I know certainly, or me, why do we turn to like alcohol or drugs? The thing is, if you're struggling with the symptoms, and also you get a lot of images and things like that going through your head, and what's called self-chat, so not voices in your head, but you're going through things in your mind. I found that drinking numbs a lot of your senses, kind of thing, a bit like you're having a headache, and then you go and take a headache tablet or something like that, ibuprofen or something like that, kind of thing. It like numbs you a little bit. And so I can only speak for the guys that I know in the military who were doing this, and sort of like abusing alcohol and drugs. It just gives you that period of time where you don't have to think about what's going on. You don't have to think about people have died. You don't have to think about where you've been and what you've done. And you might get 4 or 5 hours where basically you're drunk, and half the time you don't know what's going on. And it just does give you that sort of like space in your head. It's just the fact that your tolerance goes up. So where you used to like have a couple of drinks and you'd be okay, then you need to do 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And I used to see guys drinking 20, 25 pints. Wow. In a session with other drinks and this and that. And we would do whole days. We used to do like be banging on the pub door at 10 to 11. And one of my postings, we'd be there, we'd have, a bit of food there. Then we'd watch football in the afternoon. We'd still be there. And then around sort of like 6 o'clock, we'd go home, put a shirt on, back out again. And we'd get in at probably 3, 4 o'clock the next morning. And we'd do that almost every weekend, 2 days. There's like a bit of, I think it's a bit of binge drinking nowadays as well. And it's just a way that you can, again, numb the feelings and emotions. Like I said, I can't fully speak about drugs, but I would suggest that it's probably got the same kind of effect. Actually they brought drugs testing in, whilst I was actually in the army. Once a year you were drugs tested, and like I said, I never had, anything, but I have heard now there are more and more people who are being picked up for drugs and this and other kind of thing. I believe when I was actually in Bosnia and they came out to test the regiment, I think there's about 600 Scots there, and I heard that almost half of the regiment were found to have drugs in the body. And if you think about that, drugs in the body, carrying weapons with live ammunition, running around, it's probably quite a bit scary.
Not the best combination, I wouldn't have suggested.
No, and it was dry. We were only allowed to have 2 cans of alcohol on New Year's Eve.
Really?
In my tour over there. So it is dry. If you do get found out, you do get sent back, and you can get kicked out with a dishonourable discharge. But it is now rife. So I hear again, I can only talk about my time, not now. And also I do know that Combat Stress, which is the largest mental health, ex-services mental health charity in the UK, have now been given money specifically to look at alcohol and drugs abuse. That's how big it is. So it's huge. And again, I can remember sometimes when I've been drunk in a pub, police have come in, and you're struggling in the day. Yeah, you're drinking and this and that, but you're struggling. And they've come up, and then you've almost started fighting with the police. And then the police again, they don't have any clue. And they, to be fair, they are going to react to the situation that presents itself. There's a guy who's drunk, who's fighting.
Yeah.
And actually, what we were given in Leeds was a charity that gave people little cards, and it had your name on, and it said that you might find this person to be this, that, and the other, and the symptoms, and they have PTSD, and a number to ring, so that when the police searched you, they would find this card, and then they would understand.
That's a good idea.
There was a couple of occasions where I was arrested for drunk and disorderly, and then they've taken me to the cell, and then they've put somebody with me, and then they've got the doctor out straight away and realised that there is a difference between, someone just going out and getting drunk and fighting, and someone who's got a, severe condition and, struggling. But it's sort of like thinking that you might go in a pub, there's someone slumped over their pint or is that another kind of thing. If and I'm not just talking about the military, there's obviously other people that have been through things that might do the same, but it's just to think again, like, if you see somebody there who's never drank massively in their life, were a social drinker who went out for a pint on a Friday night, something like that, and then suddenly they start drinking, people surely must wonder what, you know, why they're suddenly doing that. So if you knew someone had been in a car crash, Chris, and then you can see the change anyway, but then you just hear that they're in the pub all the time, it's like,
yeah,
you would now sort of like think and understand, hold on a minute, they never drank that much, something now changed, they are, yeah. They've, you know what I mean, what is it kind of thing, and again, talking about the symptoms would hopefully gain some awareness out there where people might question a little bit further as to why someone is, you know, doing something that's very uncharacteristic. You know, if you're an alcoholic, you're going to be doing it. But, you know, if you've been through some sort of trauma, you will probably have some sort of addiction. It might be painkillers, but you'll probably be using something to numb the pain, you know, the emotional pain that you know you're going through kind of thing. And I've been through there, and it's a hellhole. You know, I got into debt because of drinking and going out and this and the kind, and all the effect it has on your friends, your family, the fact that you're drunk half the time, and the effect it has on, like, had on my running, my work life, my family, absolutely everything. Just by having an alcohol addiction for a person alone is enough to put someone on their back, lose their job, lose their family and friends, that one symptom, you know, alone. So that is, you know, that's a symptom, addictions, alcohol and drugs.
And when do you remember back why you started doing it? You know, right at the beginning, was it just because other people were, so it was easy access kind of thing?
Well, the thing is, in the military, there's a culture of, you know, alcohol, it's a bit of a release. So even if you didn't have any problems, I think the first day I went in, I got a pint shoved in my hand, and it was, you know, let's start drinking.
Right.
And there's a lot of peer pressure. If you can imagine, like, 17, 18 years old, can I have an apple juice, please, or an orange juice, please? Like, where, you know, me now at 39, Chris, I can go into a pub and have water, a soft drink and this other, and I don't really care. I'll now, because I can't, well, I don't really enjoy drinking full pints of lager anymore. I have a bit of shandy in there. A lot of the time I'm driving, and obviously, you know, that's a rather silly thing to do, drink driving. So, you know, I'm more aware now of the effects it has on me. But then, you know, you're 17, 18, spotty, skinny, you want to be involved in the group, peer pressure.
Absolutely.
There wouldn't be anybody in my group when I was in basic training who wasn't drinking. I'll tell you now, nobody was a non-drinker. So there's peer pressure there. And like I said, it's just a part of what you know kind of thing. Drinking and the services, they just go together. Everything you hear about when people, you know, when regiments come back to towns and cities, you'll hear that the place will probably get smashed up.
Yeah.
They'll all go out drinking and there'll be problems. So to be fair, I was in an environment where it was accepted to drink all the time. Add on the top that you're struggling and, you know, in pain, going through emotional bits and pieces. Whereas again, out here, I don't feel any social pressure. None of my friends push me to drink. They don't say I can't drink. They don't say I can drink. Nobody really pushes it out here. So it's much easier, you know, to not have that peer pressure. But again, if you're living and working within one complex, you know, you're waking up with the same people for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. They're going to the pub. What do you do? Sit there and do nothing? No, you go out with them kind of thing. So
there's
a hell of a lot of pressure to drink in the services without anything, you know, ever happening.
Okay, so this week we have an interview with a young lady called Katia, who is campaigning for a young person's mental health advocate to work with the government. Right, I'm here with Katia O'Neill, who's 17, and she's using the internet to raise awareness of mental health issues in young people and get them openly talking. Her dedication to the cause has gained the attention of former Labour spin doctor Alistair Campbell and also a few celebrities. Hi there.
Hi.
So tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into this.
Well, I'm doing it with Battlefront, and this is Series 3 now, and I watch Series 2. Basically, Battlefront is just young people campaigning for different causes.
Okay.
So just from Series 2, registered the same way. You click somewhere on the website that emails you when they need people. And yeah, they email me about Series 3, so I just applied for it.
Right, okay. And so you're studying things to do with this at school, are you, at the moment?
Well, I'm doing psychology.
Right.
And my interest in mental health kind of went from there.
Right, okay. So so what's the current thing that you're doing and the way that you're going about getting coverage for this and also you're trying to do something with the government, I understand?
Yeah, I'm trying to create a national youth ambassador for mental health. So basically, I just want a person kind of like Stephen Fry, but okay. I feel like he's more aimed at adults.
Right.
I want a recognisable figure for young people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, okay. And if people want to know more about what you're doing, how can they get hold of you and find out?
Well, all the information is on battlefront.co.uk/mental. And there are links there to my Twitter and Facebook, which I update quite a lot. So you can find out what I'm doing there regularly.
Right, and what sort of exposure have you had so far? Who's backing you, for example?
Well, I've had retweets from Stephen Fry, David Williams tweeted me, Boy George followed me the other day.
Right.
Alistair Campbell on Twitter, he follows me and he retweeted me. Also, William Hague tweeted me. So, yeah.
Excellent. Okay. And have they asked you to do anything specific?
Those people?
Yeah.
No, not really. But I am meant to be having an interview with Alistair Campbell. I did have it organised, but for various reasons we couldn't do it, but we're trying to rearrange another one.
Right. Fantastic. And do you have lots of dealings with children with mental health issues as well, or is it just something that you know, what made you to get into this area?
It's not really from any direct experience or anything. I just, when I started becoming interested in mental health, I got involved with the charity Rethink Mental Illness.
Okay.
So I'm on their young people's panel. And from there, I kind of met a lot of teenagers who have had mental health issues. And it kind of just opened my eyes to how there isn't really anything for them. Like, they'd tell stories of when they were at school and how the school dealt with it. And basically, they just didn't deal with it at all.
Really?
And I think I'm quite lucky because my school would be quite good at that thing. But it just really opened my eyes to see that not everyone is as lucky as that, and it's just not adequate to. Because, I mean, 1 in 5 young people have a mental illness.
Really?
So,
that much?
Yeah. So it really needs to be improved.
Sure. And what's your ultimate aim with all of this?
Well, with Battlefront, the campaign finishes kind of officially in December. So by then, I want to kind of get the ball rolling on the National Youth Ambassador for Mental Health.
Right.
But then after that, I'll probably carry on the campaign just by myself. But I'll just see. I'll see what I want to do then.
Okay. And what would you like people to do to sort of help you?
Well, on the Battlefront website, battlefront.co.uk, there's basically you can just sign this thing which says you're supporting my campaign.
Okay.
So that'd be really helpful to do. And then it's just as well, you can kind of see how many people are supporting it, and it's just good.
Right.
Reference.
Okay, and they can follow you on Twitter as well, is that right?
Yeah, on Twitter I'm @TalkingMental, and I'm on Facebook @StartTalkingMental.
Start Talking Mental. Okay, fantastic. Well, thank you for your time, and good luck with everything.
Thank you.
Thank you. So just got some support messages now for Simon, which I'd like to read out. These have, as you know, you can leave a message of support for Simon on the website, which is a great way to show your appreciation of what he's doing. So one from Craig, who is @CaptainHaz, says, "Simon, you are a bloody hero. What you are doing is beyond phenomenal. You are a true inspiration. So much so, I'm doing my own little version, 2 marathons in 2 weeks next April for charity. Hope your bout of illness leaves you soon and you can continue your mission. All the best, fella."
Yeah, I see him appearing a couple of times on Twitter. And again, it's brilliant to see that maybe it's inspiring people to go a little bit further with their bodies. I see that more than I do my own, you know, my own thing. So it's fantastic that, you know, you're going to be doing this next April, and obviously let us know how you get on. Actually, I did want to mention, I did see within the messages on the actual website where people have left messages for, and I do read them all, and they're fantastic. I think there's about 50 odd now, and they are fantastic. I did see one from my second wife, Stephanie, which is quite a shock to read, and she did say something along the lines of, "Keep going. If anybody can do it, you can." And you know, there's a lot of history, obviously. Again, my condition affected our marriage, and in effect, I lost my marriage because of that. And actually, I find it quite amazing that someone who was hurt so much and is also a survivor of breast cancer could come on and you know, leave me a message like that. It's quite something. So sorry to jump in there, Chris, but I just remembered that, you know, that to me is quite poignant.
Absolutely, that is definitely right. One from Tony McNally. "I just want to say, as a PTSD sufferer, Simon, that you're a true inspiration to all of us. I remember having a medical for my PTSD, and a doctor said, 'Well, you look all right to me. Like you, I'm lucky to still have my legs and arms, but people cannot see or feel the torment that occurs within us on a daily basis. I have blogged about your amazing journey, and all I can say is thank you for your wonderful efforts.'"
Well, it's very true, and in the interview with Sunday Murray, it actually says in there about when I went to my bosses and what they said, and there's two classes in the military. Sort your shit out, son, is one. And, you know, get on with it, you look fine to me. And again, it just proves that out there. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, to go to a GP, to go to a doctor and say you're struggling, and for them to say you look all right to me, it's classic, Chris. That's what drives me on. That's why I know that I need to continue, because that attitude to me angers me,
yeah.
Especially from a medical professional to make a judgment. I understand with GPs, they're under pressure now. I think you get about 2 minutes with them where they've got to look at you and go bish bosh at the end of the day. But people are giving clues. They're going in there and they're giving you big fat clues at the end of the day. So, you know, listen to people and make sure that they, you know, refer them, make sure they go and see a mental health professional, or say to Tony, you know, actually mental health charities appear to be more caring, and it might be better to then go to a mental health charity and then go back to a GP with more, you know, with some advice, and then go and say to the doctor, "Well, I've been to this charity, they say this," and then, you know, go and give them the facts so they have to do something with it, and also push them, because they are just going to send you out the door. And it's horrendous, you know, to read comments like that, and I feel for him. I've been there, Chris. I've been there so many times. Have I been to a doctor who've just said, "You look fine"? It's the old classic words, you know, do you know what I mean, kind of thing. Yeah. It's like, it's equivalent, right? And this is true. It's equivalent of me saying to someone in a wheelchair, "Well, how about you just get up and walk, mate? You look fine to me.
Exactly.
Your legs look fine. You've got legs. You know, if someone, let's say they're paralysed, so they've got their legs. You know, how about you just get up?" Kind of thing. I wouldn't say it. I wouldn't go there. Do you know what I mean? There are barriers, kind of thing. And this is what I'm saying. I'm not saying it's any easier, say, for, I'm going to talk about the military side here, for people who've lost limbs. It's certainly not. And they will have suffered, obviously, great trauma as well. But at least when they go into a doctor's surgery, the doctor doesn't go, what's wrong then? Well, I've lost my legs.
Yeah, it's back to this thing about what's visible is obviously easier to comprehend than something that you can't see, but it doesn't mean it's any less.
So, it isn't. And the thing is, even worse if people are actually saying something. They're actually saying, "I'm struggling with my sleep and this other." They're saying symptoms and someone's still saying, "You look fine." I mean, it borders on disgraceful, quite honestly. And I'm passionate about this because I have been exactly in the same position as you, Tony. I'm saying, don't give up. go and speak to, honestly, go and speak to a charity. Go to Mind or Sane. Go to one of the charities if you can find one. And please, you know, go and speak to somebody. I do feel for you. And things like that are the things that drive me on, because quite obviously people like me are needed to, you know, to go out there and speak so that people will not say. I mean, I would love to get to a point where somebody could go in and say, I've got PTSD or I'm struggling with this, and someone go, ah, oh, I've heard of that. What can we do to help you? You know, that would be fantastic.
Yeah.
So thanks very much, Tony.
Right. We're now going to move on to the poll that's been running for a while. And we asked the question, how does the cold weather and dark evenings affect your running? Do you want to run through the results of that one?
Yeah, we've got a winner with 45%. Makes no difference, and I'm a big fan of that. You know what I mean? Get out there. You can't change it unless you want to go and live in Florida. Second, with 27%, I get depressed and run less. Well, I can understand that a little bit as well. Actually, that's quite bizarre. So it's just
the percentages are a bit weird.
Okay. Well, let's say we've got an equal second then. I prefer it and run more.
Which I find is quite surprising. Actually, you want to run more.
Yes. I mean, it is definitely tougher running in the cold and dark. It's tougher running in the dark, isn't it? Kind of thing. So it's harder. And then the thing is, it taps into depression. If you've got any depressive symptoms, the dark and the cold, I mean, you know, they're the worst things.
Triggers kind of thing.
Absolutely. I use it a little bit of a challenge. It is much better. Like today, the sun is shining in Leeds. It's great. Good to get out there. Maybe best to go out, you know, like, again, first thing in the morning. So it clears your whole day and makes you feel good. Anyway, thank you very much to everybody for their votes.
Right. This week, we're going to ask, what's your favourite exercise? So, again, head over to the website racetoo100.co.uk, and we've got quite a few sponsors on the right now. So you need to scroll down the page a bit, but you will see the poll there. So please vote on that.
I don't like exercising.
That's one of the options, yeah.
Awesome.
Right. We're gonna do a competition this week. So we've got a nice competition time.
Competition time.
Nice pair of Sunwise sunglasses, I understand you've got there.
Oh, they're very nice. I run in them. In fact, I ran in them yesterday because it was sunny, and it's sunny again today. So yeah, I'll be running them again. Very nicely. I think they're well over £100, something like that. And they have interchangeable lenses.
We're not winning the ones you run in, are we? That's not the competition prize.
When I become really famous, I'll sign them and auction them somewhere at the end.
Your sweaty sunglasses, that's not what you're going to win.
No.
They're a new pair.
This is a brand new pair that were donated by Sunwise, a sponsor. And again, we're very thankful for that. So somebody is going to get a nice pair of glasses.
So the competition is going to be a retweet competition. So you will need to be on Twitter for this. And if you've never been on Twitter before, why not sign up and follow at 100 Mara 100 weeks. And then we'll send a message out. And when that message has been retweeted 100 times, we will pick a random retweeter out of that 100, and they will win these beautiful Sunwise sunglasses.
I'm sure there's somebody there called Chris who's retweeted 100 times.
Yeah, that's right.
Excellent.
A quick update on the merchandise as well. I'm just waiting through. Our friends at Red Pudsey have printed a vest, and they're going to send it through to me in the post. The only issue I've got is finding someone to model it. So you can see what it looks like. So not sure. It might be my ugly mug, but I might put a paper bag on.
Why? Actually, I can see a competition there. You see, somebody, you can run a little polo competition, and then they get one of the first tops, and then they have to model it.
Yeah.
In the style of a catalogue.
To become the face of Race to 100.
Then that excludes me and you then.
So I'm just waiting for that to come through anyway. Then we'll get a photo up, and then you can start ordering fairly soon.
And I believe we've got some nice bands.
Yep, I was just going to say about the we're just, again, I'm just waiting for, I should have 100 of the wristbands coming through, which again you'll be able to order. So again, they're not with me yet, but as soon as I've got them, we will make that available. Right, so that's pretty much it for this week. So thanks for listening, and Simon's just going to run through a few thanks. One thing I just wanted to quickly mention, in case anyone is following my barefoot progress, because it is quite an interesting one. I have still been doing the barefoot. I tried a 5K run, and the shins are absolutely fine, but my right calf was still aching. I've also done this week I did a 4K run, and it was a bit better. So slowly. Right, so over to you, Simon, to wrap things up.
Yep, thanks as ever go to the following people. Team 100, without them, I would, obviously I would struggle and not be there. And especially to Simon Blackwell. Again, I think he gets mentioned every week now. He has, like I said, he has now become my manager. And so he works every single day now, trying to gain the new sponsors that we've got. And we are now in talks with Virgin, started with Virgin Active. Now we're in talks with the whole group, which will be just absolutely huge for us. So he's gaining sponsors nearly every single day now.
And if anyone wants to get hold of him, it's manager@racetowhundred.co.uk, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So if anybody wants to do well, basically what's happened now is any discussion, anything to do with me now goes through Simon. I do not deal direct anymore. He deals with the press, he deals with all my commercial side, my events and bits and pieces. It all goes through Simon. So again, he's had another sterling effort this week, where he's brought some more companies on board. And I'm very thankful that, this guy's come into my life. He has his own things going on. He has his own condition that he battles called lymphedema, which is where your leg sort of like balloons up four or five sort of like sizes bigger. And he also has a son, little son, who has leukemia as well. So quite a top fella. And he'll be up next week doing some work with me, which will be brilliant. So thank you very much again. And it's just popped through my letterbox now. Grays.com.
Just had to stop recording suddenly because the doorbell went.
Recording because, yeah. So that, as we do, we like to be sometimes highly unprofessional on this podcast. It's brilliant. when the old postie just pops in. Grays.com, who go and have a look at their website, because they do these little highly nutritious. It's like four little pots. And you can order, so you can be like nuts and berries and seeds and things like that. And it comes in a little, almost envelope size, comes straight through your letterbox. I think they're about $3.99 a time. They're absolutely fantastic. So mine's just dropped through the letterbox. And also, we're just starting to work with a company called myfood.co.uk. They prepare three meals each day, 7 days a week, and it gets sent to you in a huge thing. And they sent me six days worth of meals, and they are new when it comes to nutritious. They are absolutely fantastic. So they're all pre-made. Some are like ones that are ready for microwave, and some that are like a boil in the bag kind of thing, so you just boil it and away you go kind of thing. And it's fantastic. So I'm glad to be working with them. Just a quick mention, my sponsors, the list gets bigger, I think it's growing every week, which I'm not going to complain about. So it's Red Pudsey, Up and Running, Naked Bars, Sunwise Glasses, who we mentioned earlier, Running Free Magazine, Planet V, KT Tape, who I'll be speaking to, I believe, tomorrow on a radio station in Bulgaria, of all places, AQL, Accord PR, Jet2.com, Best Western Hotels, Grays.com, MyFood.co.uk, and Bradford College.
Great, and there is a new way that you can help Simon online now. If you shop online at any stores, if you go over to the website and you can see underneath the Help Simon section, you can now, if you click on the link to the shops that we've got listed there and you buy your items as you would normally, Simon will get a very small commission from each purchase, which will help with the challenge. Because as you know, if you listen to this regularly, he is self-funded, and although he's got all these sponsors, financially this is still a big struggle for him. So that is a great way. And if you go along and there are stores on there that you shop at that aren't listed, then if you drop a little comment at the bottom of that page, we can try and get that added on. As I say, it just it won't cost you any more to buy what you normally buy online, but Simon will get a little bit towards the challenge.
Fantastic.
And as usual, you can donate a tweet by going to justcause.org/100mara100weeks. What that does is it allows us to send a message no more than one a day out through your Twitter account on behalf of the challenge. And if you've enjoyed the podcast, please go along to iTunes and give us a rating and possibly a review, because it just helps to get the podcast higher up when people are searching within iTunes, which means we can get more listeners, which again helps with the challenge. As usual, follow us on Facebook or Twitter. All the links are on racetowhundred.co.uk.
It's a goodbye from me this week in Leeds.
And it's a goodbye from me too, Mickey Mouse.